Latinos comprise the largest portion of COVID-19 cases in which ethnicity is known. This is true in Mecklenburg County and statewide. In Mecklenburg, they make up 37% of cases, but are only about 14% of the population. This week, WFAE's Laura Brache examines the communication barriers Latino families are experiencing during the pandemic in a series called Undocumented and Uninsured. In partnership with La Noticia, she reports on cultural differences and economic conditions that play a role in the coronavirus's spread. She kicks off the series today by telling the story of a Latino family in the Cabarrus County community of Midland.
Ana Chagoyan couldn't attend her older brother Juan's funeral in July. Instead, she had to watch it live stream from her home because the coronavirus had affected so many members of her family.
Please, everyone, be mindful of others. This disease is real and it kills.
Ana came to this country illegally with her family 18 years ago when she was 20 years old. In addition to three of her kids and her husband, her household includes several extended family members, including her mother and grandson. Many Latino families, particularly immigrants, have similar living situations, says Dr. Viviana Martinez Bianchi, a community health expert at Duke Health. And she says such living arrangements make it easy for the coronavirus to spread through families.
Many of the most beautiful things about the Latino community, like supporting each other, living together in the middle of the pandemic where distance is necessary, ends up being something that plays against us.
In the Chagoyan household, Ana's brother, Juan, was the first to show symptoms early in July. Because of their immigration status, the family wasn't eligible for federal help. So he continued to work as a stonemason, Ana says, because the family depended on him. The virus spread through the home, and his daughter, grandson, and mother tested positive for COVID-19. The mother showed severe symptoms a few days after Juan got sick.
The ambulance came for her and took her to the hospital with a high fever. They said, "Your mom has a lot of COVID symptoms."
She was diagnosed with COVID-19, yet that night, the family says Novant Health Presbyterian Hospital released her from the hospital. They think their lack of medical insurance played a role in releasing her. Chagoyan says she was the next to show symptoms, along with her 21-month-old grandson. Meanwhile, her mother got worse and had to go to the hospital a second time.
We had to get my mother to the hospital because my mother was dying here at home. She needed oxygen. She couldn't breathe.
She says the Cabarrus County Health Department ordered the family to isolate for 3.5 weeks.
They said we had to get tested and said if we left the house, we'd be arrested.
Early the next day, Chagoyan's husband and daughter joined Juan to get tested at the Novant Health Urgent Care Clinic in Indian Trail. Back home, Ana's eldest yelled for her mother. Juan had collapsed.
My brother was convulsing badly and vomiting. He wouldn't stop vomiting and squirming.
She called 911. Paramedics told them they suspected Juan was having a stroke or a heart attack. He was immediately taken to the Atrium Health Cabarrus Emergency Center in Concord. The family says doctors confirmed he had a stroke and found blood clots in his brain. Records show because of some of the family's confirmed COVID-19 status, he was presumed positive. He was rushed to the ICU at Carolina's Medical Center in Charlotte the next morning. Ana's daughter authorized an emergency surgery that doctors told them could save his life. Juan's medical records show it was never performed because after several CT scans, doctors at CMC decided he didn't need it. The medical records also show that the stroke disabled 85% of Juan's functions. The family members had no idea until their attorney received his medical records. Juan was in the hospital for 5 days. The family wasn't allowed to visit him because of COVID-19 restrictions. The family understood that, but was hoping to talk to and see him. If it couldn't happen in person, how about video call? It never happened. At first, according to hospital records, they were told Juan wouldn't be able to take a call because of his condition. The family says they were later given permission to call, but were told the ICU tablet didn't work.
The entire time, they kept telling us that my brother was fine, that he didn't need the surgery, and they did the CT scan.
On July 19, they were told he was stable and taken off oxygen, which his medical records confirm. But the family interpreted that as meaning he was recovering. Medical records say he was encephalopathic. That means with damaged brain function. Anna's daughter called the next day to get an update on her uncle.
My daughter screamed and screamed, and well, I was scared. My youngest told me, "Mom, my uncle is dead." And I said, "What do you mean he's dead?"
According to their attorney, his cause of death is listed as cardiac arrest and COVID-19 pneumonia. But the only mention of pneumonia in Juan's medical records were in his discharge notes signed by a doctor on July 22nd, 2 days after his death. In fact, throughout his progress notes, his lungs are described as clear and normal. The daughter says the COVID-19 test Juan took before going to the hospital came back negative. Atrium Health declined to comment on Juan Chagoyan's case because it could turn into a legal matter since the family had hired an attorney. At the end of August, the number of adults in ICU for COVID-19 in the Metrolina region was 59. The health department does not provide specific data for ethnicity or race. 4 of the 10 people living in the Chagoyan household tested positive. Others showed mild symptoms. Anna Chagoyan says her family continues to be on the lookout for COVID-19 symptoms. They say the death of Juan leaves them with more questions than answers from the hospital in the midst of a pandemic that is disproportionately affecting people like them. For WFAE, I'm Laura Brache.